Welcome home. We are WNST, Towson, Baltimore, Baltimore Positive, and AM 1570. There's a whole like AM dial on your car. Just make us the whole AM dial. That's all. Make it. I can be number six. I don't need to be number one or number two. Just make us number six. We're number six. Make us number five, like Brooks Robinson and Joe Flacco. That's fine. Just set a spot for us because it is football season. It is baseball season. Luke is about to join us. It's all brought to you by friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have the Gold Rush Sevens doublers. I will have these on Friday when we do the Fells Point Oyster Festival. We're doing 26 oysters in 26 days in 26 ways. Luke, I had an oyster in Hamden that was a fried oyster fritter on a Benedict of French toast with a poached egg. And I know you're thinking, like, maybe not. I looked at it on the menu like a deviled egg. I thought, maybe not. I ordered it, and it was – if anything is better than that later this month from the Oyster Tour, come see me, as Joe Flacco would say. I want to know about it. So our friends at and you know, I now have a prop for this, Luke. Liberty Pure Solutions. They've been providing our water forever. I now actually have a prop. I have a shirt too. Let's see here. 1-800-253-2692. And if you can't remember that, just 800 Clean Water. 800 Clean Water, Liberty Pure Solutions takes care of all of our water needs, all of our plumbing needs. But more than that, if you have well water, I'm that guy. Want to stay healthy. Want to stay safe. Liberty Pure Solutions does that. Jiffy Lube Multicare gets Luke back and forth from Owings Mills to Camden Yards and his palatial estate somewhere near Shrewsbury, Pennsylvania. Our friends at Royal Farms putting the gas in. Jiffy Lube making sure things are happening. And we call these wise conversations because we were wise enough to take Sunday off after Thursday's loss. And extra days, extra time, they're still 0-1. I got a lot of football in me on Sunday. And it's a long season around here, Luke. But it's no fun being 0-1 for any of the teams that lost this week.
Yeah, it's not. I would say this, having watched as much of the action as I could, having also been at Camden Yards covering the Orioles lose 2 out of 3 to the Rays.
I'm just saying, if you had Roku, you could have stayed home.
I kind of wish I had, based on how the Orioles didn't hit the ball, but I had Red Zone up, and I was following it, and I'll say this much. Look, it's not good to be 0-1. It's not fun to be 0-1. It is only 0-1, however, and compared to how a lot of teams around the league played, and more specifically, how the rest of the AFC North looked, including the Steelers, who did win but did not score a touchdown in the process of doing it, I think you come out of the weekend feeling a little bit better about the Ravens overall. You know, we talked about this at length on Friday when we broke down the disappointment of the season opening loss, but I said at the time, nothing about Thursday night's performance really changed my mind about the team or where it's going or anything like that. I already had concerns about the offensive line, and there was nothing that really changed about that. It confirmed my concerns to this point. And that's certainly something they need to figure out. There's no doubt about that. But you know, you look around the league, offense, not very good. Quarterback play, not very good. I saw Steve, is it Palazzolo? I know we've had him at Radio Row. He used to be with Pro Football Focus. He just moved on from there recently. But he tracked it. Week one NFL passing touchdowns. Now, this is excluding Monday Night Football and assuming Aaron Rodgers and Brock Purdy don't throw for 12 touchdowns between them or anything crazy like that. But this is shaping up to be the worst week one in terms of NFL passing touchdowns that we've seen in a long time. Go back to 2019. There were 61 touchdown passes in week one. 2021, 61. 2022, 51. The last 2 years, Nestor, last year, 37. This year, going into Monday Night Football, 33. I mean, we're talking roughly half of what we saw 5 years ago in terms of week one passing touchdowns. I think offensive line play, I think a lot with cover two defense. Yeah, that's been talked about. You and I talked about that quite a bit last year. But point is, I get it. It was choppy, and you know, the Ravens did not have a clean, rhythmic passing game for a full 60 minutes on Thursday night by any stretch of the imagination. But when you look at how they performed and what the final numbers look like compared to a lot of teams around the league on Sunday, I think you come out of it feeling better about this team and saying, look, Yeah, they got to figure out how to win and beat Kansas City at some point if they're going to get to where they want to go. And they're probably going to see them again in January if both teams are healthy and upright. But based on what we saw around the league, there are a lot of teams looking for it, including the Cincinnati Bengals, who put up the Carolina Panthers. We knew they stunk, right? I mean, okay, maybe people thought they'd be better, but they stunk last year, right? So you're not shocked by that. The Bengals to lose to the Patriots at home, easily the most surprising result of the weekend. And if you're the Ravens, expecting them to be your biggest threat in terms of trying to win the AFC North, I think you feel better about things than they certainly felt on Friday morning.
Look, on a Monday, it's easy to talk about Sunday's game. I'm going to go back to Thursday. I want to see where the Ravens are, and I want to talk about, in retrospect, having watched most of the teams in the league play now. My wife and I even got the first half of that São Paulo game, and before I fell asleep on Friday night, we went up to Cooper's North, and I had a glass of Cabernet, and I had a delicious blackened tuna wrap, and the next thing I know, I'm asleep, and I wake up, I'm like, what happened to love? What happened? What's going on? There was a lot of football over the weekend, not to mention college football that me and everybody else didn't watch, Mike Locksley, by the way. And you and I could talk about that because that's its own thing. And my wife and I had a long conversation about that in the car on Sunday, having an oyster over at Urban Oyster. But the offensive line and the running game and what the Ravens really want to do, right? Like, so I wrote my column this on Friday. I saw you wrote your 12 thoughts and all the things you write. It was kind of weird because it's a Friday and a Saturday and nothing else was kind of going on. The offensive line and running the ball, I still think, like, what are they trying to do? What do they really want to do with Lamar? They don't want Lamar to throw the ball 50 times. They don't want him in a pro set. They don't want him being a drop back passer, although you'll say he's good at it. And they don't want to be throwing screen passes. They bring Joe Flacco back to do that. To me, this, when it works, when the offense works, whether it's Greg Roman or Todd Monken, I'm talking about Lamar. When Lamar works, when his style works, is when they're in second and two and second and three, when first down is really productive. When first down puts them in a position that you have to worry about Lamar's hips, you have to worry about Derrick Henry, you have to worry about the ball going over top, you have to guard Zay Flowers, you have to worry about two tight end. Like all of the stressors that the Ravens offense and their talent, they have a lot of talent. So does J.K. Dobbins, apparently, from what I saw too in the Chargers game. There's your money saved, Luke. But are they going to consistently be able to do what they want to do at heart of heart of heart of heart? They want to be in second and two and second and three. They want to score touchdowns. I get that. Like all of that. Lamar ran that was an awful game plan on Thursday night, right? They ran Lamar ran a lot. Lamar took a lot of hits. It didn't work. The running game wasn't working. The Derrick Henry thing didn't work. Likely worked. I mean, there's a star, and that's and I Lamar's an MVP. I mean, I'm not down on Lamar. I'm trying to figure out where how this thing really works and how it's really effective. And when I think of 2019, and I think of the best elements of last year, and I know it's hard to do. Every team in the league like to get 7, 8 yards on first down, right? But when they can do that, it changes everything, and they get defenses backing up. It changes second down. It changes personnel. It changes all sorts of things. And I woke up Friday, and when I'm writing my columnist in sobriety on Friday before I wrote my Dear Eric DaCosta letter, I thought to myself, there's nothing about this that feels to me like Derrick Henry's going to fall 3 yards forward after gaining 5 yards, and that this offensive line is consistently, maybe against bad teams. I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Raiders have a bad front. We have a bad team, but I am worried about that element of when this has been really successful. That's been the formula. When they score the 40 and 50 points and they're just, boat racing teams, they're boat racing teams because they can keep the ball and they can enforce their will on the run and scare the hell out of you in the pass. And then there's Lamar's hips, right? You have to worry about all of that. But if you can't stop the run, you're not going to beat the Ravens. If you can stop the run a little bit, I don't know. I don't know that the Ravens can win that way a lot. Or often, or in January. And we've seen that when they fall behind, when they're 10 points down, like all of those things, they have a harder time. And I know you'll say they came a tippy, tippy toe away from maybe even stealing the game the other night, but it wasn't the game plan they want. What they want to do this week is be in second and two, first and 10. Be in second and four, first and 10. Ball goes over the top, big play, come back, run it again, second and three, second and four. That's how the timing of this worked when they were great, when they're going to win 13 or 14 games.
Yeah, well, and look, it's a simple formula. You need your offensive line to play better. Having reviewed the game, having rewatched it, I came out of it not quite as concerned about the pass protection because it did get better as the night went on. Now, let me be clear. I'm not saying it's perfect or that doesn't need to improve as well. Let me be very straightforward about that. However, where my grave concern, grave's too strong. It's week one. Let's not overreact too much anyway. We overreact in week one, but let's also be measured. Not grave, but potentially fatal flaw if we don't see long-term improvement is very much on the run blocking side. I think having reviewed the game, Tyler Linderbaum, you know, there were maybe one or two reps where he didn't look great. You know, the holding call, I thought, for all the hand-wringing about the illegal formations, the holding call on him I thought was really ticky-tack. And the illegal formation madness aside, I actually think Ronnie Stanley played really good football on Thursday night. That was a good version of Ronnie Stanley. Now, the big question is, are you going to get that for 19 more games potentially? Or let's say at least 15 or 16, you know, if we're being a little more realistic, knowing his injury history. But, you know, the rest of the offensive line, and specifically the right side of the offensive line, just had so much difficulty moving anyone in the run game. And for this to work at the optimal level, you know, for everything you just mentioned, you know, being productive, getting 6, 7, 8 yards on first down. And look, every team wants to do that. I have said to you over the last 5, 6 years where the Ravens have had this, you know, Lamar Jackson era offense where it's been way more successful than not. We've talked about it a lot that the best third down offense is what? The offense that avoids third downs altogether, right? And to do that, you need to be really good on first down. So I look at the O-line, and as I've said throughout training camp, even going back to OTAs, it's in pencil, not pen. I'm going to be interested to see, you know, not necessarily that there are drastic changes this week, but what does right tackle look like in terms of McCary and Rosengarten, right? I mean, McCary started, Rosengarten played a little bit. Really rough start for him. You know, I don't think he necessarily played with a ton of confidence, which, hey, lining up against someone like Chris Jones, that's a challenge for someone in their first NFL game. There's no doubt. So I expect him to get better. So what do we see there? And I think the big one is Daniel Faalele. It's been an interesting experiment going back to the end of OTAs and mandatory minicamp. I think he is better in pass protection than some have made it out to be. You know, even going back to talking about the preseason performances lumped in with what we saw week one. But I don't know how much of that is his technique and how much of that is he's 380 pounds just trying to get around him from a pass, you know, from a pass rush standpoint. You know, could argue he has a little bit of an edge there, but he is just, I'm not seeing it with him as a run blocker. And that sounds counterintuitive, right? When you're talking about someone who's 380 pounds, you'd like to think, oh man, he'll maul people, but offensive linemen need to have good footwork, right? They've got to have quick feet. Even though we're talking about 300 plus pound individuals, they need to be able to move. And, you know, when you're talking about counters and pulls and traps and all those different things, you've got to have the quickness to get to where you need to be to make the block. And whether we're talking about the three preseason games or what we saw Thursday night, I'm just not seeing that from Daniel Faalele. I'm not. And I'm not saying that they're going to bench him this week or that I'm adamant that they need to bench him immediately, but
well, this is an experiment all along, right? You look at him and you say,
sure,
this is Harbaugh saying we're going to do something nobody else nobody else sees it, but we see it. Or Harbaugh, Dallas Andrews is dead. I mean, this was decisions of offensive line coaches that have been here 5 weeks. This has to be more about Monken and more about Harbaugh and more about senior leadership looking at this and saying, what do we have here in these players that we've drafted? And is this the best we're going to do? And to your point, Ben Cleveland, what? I mean, it's very telling as to who's on the field as to how they feel about the guys that aren't on the field for me.
Sure. Well, and I was just going to get to Ben Cleveland. And look, you've heard me have criticism of Ben Cleveland over the last 3 years, right? I'm not like the president of the Ben Cleveland fan club. Let me be clear about that. However, when he filled in for Kevin Zeitler the last couple of years, albeit, I get it, it's only a few games, but they were still real NFL games. He played pretty well. Like, I'm not saying he's the next Marshall Yanda well, but he played pretty well. But to your point, and I think it's evident, no matter what they say in a press conference format, that they don't have a lot of trust in him. And but at some point in time, I can also remember once upon a time, the Ravens not having a whole lot of trust in Bryant McKinney. And it came down to it, he was still their best option at left tackle when it came down to it. It helped win them a Super Bowl. As much as we talk about Flacco and Bolden and some of the other heroes of that playoff run, Bryant McKinney being inserted at left tackle and the shuffling they did on the offensive line was way up there on the list of the reasons why they made the run they did in 2012 in that postseason. So I'm not at all implying that moving Ben Cleveland into a starting guard spot is going to fix their offensive line. But at the same time, when I see Falele struggle the way that he did, and just the limitations that he has physically, I continue to look at this and say, I have a tough time believing and buying and accepting that he's not one of their two best options at guard, right? Voorhees at left guard, I thought he played a little bit better than we saw in the preseason. So that was encouraging because I thought he struggled in the preseason and did not look all that great. Compared to, how much we've been talking about him and, the perception that that was a steal for them in the draft a year ago. What I saw in week one for him, I want to continue to see growth, but I thought it was okay. There was something to say, hey, I want to see more of that. Needs to get better, no question about it. But I just look at Falele and it's just, he's so limited physically in terms of his feet and being able to move and understanding that got a 250-pound running back. You can't have a 300-pound running or a guard that isn't getting to where he needs to go with trap blocks and different things of that nature. And again, I'm not an offensive line guru in terms of evaluating it, but I don't see him doing nearly enough as a run blocker to be encouraged by it, right? So we'll see. And again, Kansas City does have a good defense, and they proved it again on Thursday night. Although they were susceptible to the run last year, which is why so many people lost their minds about how little the Ravens ran the ball in the title game. But what we saw on Thursday night, they didn't run effectively, right? I mean, Derrick Henry got 13 carries. It's not as though he touched the ball three times. At 13 carries, and he averaged 3.5 yards per carry. I mean, you can keep beating your head against a brick wall, or you need to run block at a higher level. I mean, Lamar. 122 rushing yards. It sounds, that sounds awesome. And it was, and look, but that was largely Lamar scrambling. Those weren't, there were only, he had the two design runs early in the first half, kind of on those back-to-back plays. There wasn't a whole lot for Lamar in terms of design runs. That was primarily scrambling, which don't get me wrong. I'm fine with that. I like Lamar scrambling, but if that's your entire running game, as it basically was on Thursday night, that's a problem. Right? That you don't want that. That's not ideal, right? No matter how much you love it. I mean, we agreed on this. You and I have fought how many times about Lamar running, how much is too much. We absolutely are on the same page that Thursday night specifically, he took way too many hits. And you don't want to see, you see that over the course of the season, you're begging for trouble. But that said, you've got to be able to move the ball on the ground. And that's where I look at this
somebody's
offensive
got to
line
run
right
it
now and
if you're
say,
going to run it right somebody's got to run it somebody's got to get 5, 6, 7 yards when they run it, not 1, 2, 3 yards.
But also part of that is design runs though, right?
But he's
I mean,
still
it's
their
got
best
to
running back.
what we
He
saw.
didn't like being called a running back. He's still their best play.
Their best rusher, sure. And look, again, I don't. I never want to see them apologize for that. However, when you bring Derrick Henry in and you're giving him $9 million this year, you need to have a functional offensive line that's going to allow you to maximize that investment. And that's where my concern really lies right now. The other thing I will say, only a couple option runs in there. The read option with Derrick Henry and Lamar that everyone talked about throughout the offseason, they did very little of that specifically. Now, I will say this, and this has been talked about by a lot of people smarter than me, even. A lot was made about Derrick Henry, what he did at Tennessee, not running out of shotgun a whole lot and being under center more. The Ravens did try to run under center. They were under center a decent amount. I think if you're going to do that more than you have in the past, which I'm not surprised to see them do that a little bit more. And let me be clear, they're still way more in shotgun than not. But you've got to mix in passes and be, you know, balanced there and not too predictable there. So it wasn't so much that I had concerns about. But, you know, I definitely want to see them mix in a few more option runs there and really try to put the defense in conflict. And that, in turn, should help the offensive line, you know, if you're doing that. But, you know, it needs to be better. Their running game needs to be better. And again, you look at the final stats and you say, Luke, you sound crazy. If you're just looking at it from a box score standpoint, yeah, they ran for 185 yards and 5.8 yards per carry. But we know that most of that was Lamar scrambling, which if you have to do it in a given week, then you have to do it in a given week. I'm not, you know, and I still think Lamar initiating and taking as much contact as he did on Thursday night was way more a byproduct of the opponent and some carryover from the AFC title game and the national stage and all that. So I don't think what we saw out of Lamar Thursday night is that Lamar is suddenly 2018 Lamar again, that he's going to be running into guys or anything like that. But you've got to have a more productive, structured ground game. So they're chasing that right now. There's no question about that. And that's where I do have more concern where, you know, the pass protection at least settled down some as the game went on. Now, they were chipping guys and, you know, whether it was Justice Hill or the tight ends. I mean, we saw even Mark Andrews stand in to pass protect at times, you know, not a whole lot, but at times. So they were adjusting and they weren't asking their line.
When Justin Hill's taking on, you know, Chris Jones at the end of the game and doing an okay job, by the way.
He was commendable. Yeah, right. I mean,
but look, that's not
ideal, right?
That's not the way you want to draw this up the next time you play the Kansas City Chiefs.
Of course, no question about that. So, I mean, look, they have to grow from a pass protection standpoint, but what's really behind right now, what's really lacking right now with the offensive line is the run blocking. I mean, that was not pretty. I mean, even think back to that penultimate drive where, remember, they go for it on the fourth and one, and then they ended up kicking a field goal then on the fourth and four after that. You remember the fourth and one, right? A Chiefs defensive lineman was in the backfield ready, and Derrick Henry broke the tackle, or they would have been stuffed in that position. So that's how close they came to getting nothing on that drive. And then we're having a way different conversation than a toenail of Isaiah Likely away from potentially winning the game. So, you know,
well, my column, I wrote that at the end, it came close, but it wasn't a close game.
I mean, there are different ways of looking at it. I mean, yes, it was a close game because ultimately it's the points on the scoreboard is what matter, right? I mean, you know, you are in the same way that Bill Parcells would say, you are what your record says you are. The scoreboard is.
Dude,
scoreboard.
I didn't get that last year after they lost that championship game. I thought, well, if they played them five times, they might win three or four of them. I don't know that I feel that way about this year's version of it. Having seen them get beat twice now and having seen this offensive line, and unlike the Orioles pitching, which may have somebody in, you know, Grayson might be coming back and they might get Westberg back in the lineup. I'm not looking up and down. Matt Burke in his prime and Marshall Yanda, they're not coming here. You know, Brian McKinney, I don't know who's coming here, but I was a little thoughtful in my conversations all summer with you that, like, when the cuts happened and I was on vacation and the Orioles were in L.A. 2 weeks ago, that they would find somebody else as Kevin Zeitler or Morgan Moses, you know, that somebody would cut somebody over money. Hey, we got this kid. Let's cut the $6 million guard we have because we got a kid that can play and he's not, you know, whatever it is. I thought they would back into something where they would get a guard or a right, something on that side of the ball, on the right side of the offensive line that they could say, well, the year they got Andre Girard, it didn't work. You know, I mean, they brought Willie Anderson in one year. It didn't work. Worked for a minute, but he was 100 years old. But I just thought that if they didn't like what they saw all summer, they would do better than putting Daniel Falele out there to run around and starting the game with McCary. And the kid they drafted's not ready. If he was ready, he'd be. They wouldn't be starting Patrick McCary. So I don't know. It feels a lot messier. And when DaCosta, the only time his head comes above water like Loch Ness Monster, you know, when he's acknowledging. Harbaugh has to acknowledge it, whether he wants to or not. The rest of us, I'll acknowledge it for you, John, that the offensive line might not be good enough right now. And I don't know that we look at it and say, in November, they'll be better. Okay, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I don't believe that right now. I have, there's no basis to believe that on the small sample size I have, and there is no preseason. Whenever you see them running around in gym shorts out there for a month, that doesn't mean anything. You know, Raiders will be another test for them this week. I mean, Raiders, you know, front seven, we'll see. But if you can't dominate at home and running the ball, I mean, offensive line and running the ball is about dominating on every play, not some plays, every play.
Well, I mean, you have to be able to move people. I mean, it's that simple. And, you know, we didn't see it in the preseason, and understanding it, you know, that's an incomplete evaluation, but you could still look at those specific individuals that were playing, even if Linderbaum and Ronnie Stanley weren't out there and Derrick Henry and Lamar weren't out there and Patrick Ricard wasn't out there. You know, so we understood it was incomplete, but when you looked at it on an individual basis, they weren't moving people the way that you'd like to see. So, and that's why I said, I mean, Falele, pass protection in the preseason was better than people gave him credit for. The run blocking, I'm not seeing that for him right now. I mean, unless we see some drastic improvement and growth in that specific area, I don't know if that experiment's going to last, let alone if it's going to work. So,
well, that's what they want to do. They want to run the ball, so they better be able to do it.
But to go back to what you just said, I mean, look, part of the problem with that is, I mean, you were watching around the league more closely than I was, having been out at the ballpark covering the Orioles for the early afternoon games. Offensive line play around the league is not very good. I mean, how about the mess that the Rams were dealing with on Sunday night with the injury? It's borderline miraculous that they were able to make that the game that they did, where it goes into overtime, considering the state of their offensive line with guys going down with injury, and they were shuffling, what, they had three or four different guys that had changed positions and all this. I mean, it was a mess. I think you see way more offensive lines closer to that, or closer to where the Ravens are currently, than offensive lines that you say, man, that's a dominant offensive line, or man, that's a really complete, steady, trustworthy offensive line. I mean, we've talked about this for years, the quality of offensive line play in the league, or lack thereof. So I think part of the problem of what you just said, and look, I was in agreement with you, and I'll remind everyone, the trade deadline is not till early November. So you do have a couple months here, and so much can happen in terms of teams that have young offensive linemen that, you know, they want to get on the field, get ready to play. Teams will fall out of, you know, the wild card race, and, you know, some team will be 2-6 and might have a guard that has an expiring contract that they're going to want to try to see if they can get a late round pick for it. And if that's the case, I could see Eric DaCosta pouncing on that, right? But is that going to be there in week two? Is that going to be there in week three? Is that going to be there in week four? I mean, that's the question mark right now. So as things stand in the present, you have what you have on your roster right now. So look, a week from now, we might be talking about Ben Cleveland being the starting right guard, and maybe he replaces McCary because they, or not McCary, Falele, because they say privately, you know what? We don't love Ben Cleveland. We don't trust him. We haven't played him the last 3 years, when people, you know, outsiders thought he might be a starting guard the last 3 years, but he's the best we have there. So we need to go with him. You know, maybe we see that this week, maybe not, but boy, you want to see some growth. And like I said, I can live with the fact that their pass protection did settle in some as the game went on, but boy, you need to see a big jump from them in the run blocking department, because, you know, we saw it last year with Derrick Henry in Tennessee. He ran behind an awful offensive line, and go look at his numbers. Now, he was still a 1,000-yard rusher. Not saying he was terrible, but he didn't look like the Derrick Henry of a few years before that. And the big reason why was he's behind a lousy offensive line. So, you know, that's where I'm really looking to see some growth, and I'm really looking to see if potentially there are a couple tweaks with the lineup, because as we've said all along, this was written in pencil, not pen. So it's got to be better, and it starts with that. And yeah, I do think Todd Monken, a goal this week is definitely going to be to mix in some more option runs and things of that nature that we kind of expected to see all along with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry in the same backfield.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. He is monitoring baseball and football all week. Orioles in Boston. Orioles heading to Detroit this weekend. The Ravens hosting the Raiders. We got Pearl Jam in town. Springsteen's in town. Styx is in town. You'll hear some rock and roll this week from those Lofgren. The great Great, Nils Lofgren, Marylander, as well as Lawrence Gowan, Canadian from the band Styx, joining us here. Mark Viviano did a long-form sit-down with us last week at Coco's, as did Mike Rossigliano. We've had all sorts of great guests here. We're doing gambling awareness. We're doing 26 oysters in 26 days on behalf of the Oyster Recovery Partnership. I'm a couple of days into that. You'll want to follow that on social media as well. We will be at State Fair on the 24th with Angela Alsobrooks. We will have Maryland Lottery scratch-offs to give away. I'll have Raven scratch-offs to give away, but I have a handful of Gold Rush 7s doublers to get rid of this week. We'll be at Cooper's on Friday for the Oyster Festival going on down at Fells Point. My dude, Dave Scheinen from the Washington Post, back from Paris and the Olympics. He'll be joining us to talk about the Olympics, as well as Chad Wiesling, NFL agent who lives in Canton. My buddy, he a Terp, to talk about the Terps and their crowds and Mike Loxley and losing and all that good stuff. So plenty of things here. Baseball, football. It is a political season. Going to have an election in about 8 weeks as well. We got oysters. We got crab cakes. And we're a two-sport town. He's Luke. I'm Nestor. We're WNSD, AM 1570. Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.